You are listening to the Politics in Action Report at CGMQ. I'm Emily, bringing you up to speed on the most recent political affairs. What's occurred recently on the political front that I will be discussing is, at the local level, Rome-Missisquoi residents petitioning to save some of their natural greenery, Quebec restaurant owners advocating for a tip-sharing mechanism in the labor code, an update on the CAQ's electoral candidates for the provincial election, the Bloc Québécois' loss of members to the Conservative Party of Canada, and former Prime Minister Stephen Harper into the heat of a debate. I will begin with some coverage of political news on the local front. On April 30th of this year, the Member of Parliament for the Brome-Missisquoi region, Denis Paradis, had stood up in the House of Commons to deliver a petition from citizens in the riding, particularly concerning the areas of Sutton, Frelicksburg, and Abercorn. The petition is specifically calling to the Minister of Environment and Climate Change, Catherine McKenna, to preserve a designated area within these regions and classify it as a natural park. The reason such a local issue was brought up in Canadian Parliament is because the federal government has a duty and obligation to fulfill environmental protection. Recall that I once said that change occurs by appealing to the highest level. In the case of environmental protection, that would be the federal government. I think the main concern, as a native to the Eastern Townships, is the fact that the Sutton, Abercorn regions are increasingly popular, and with this comes the construction of condos and new homes, which ultimately means less preservation of what brought these visitors to the region in the first place, its natural beauty. This is also the case of the city of Broma. It is now filled with condos and cottages, and this is with reason the city is in the process of establishing a natural park to preserve what is left of its natural green space. As you know, once the green space is gone, it can never be returned. It is definitely effective for Paradis' constituents to put upward pressure on the Canadian government. A lot of people from my region actually say a lot has changed in the region, and a lot of the natural forestry has disappeared. And to them, it's sad because they have lost some of their childhood memories to urbanism. I'm quite pleased citizens are taking the initiative to preserve land. As most people say, we have no voice, and there isn't much we can do about it. But really, Canadian citizens hold a greater amount of power than they think. Hence, with reason, Denis Paradis stood up in the House of Commons to represent his people, the interests of the people in his riding. Environmentalism is a relatively new and emerging ideology, and this situation definitely shows how it is infiltrating the local levels. I will end with some wise words from my Politics, Power, and the Common Good textbook. We need to think of ourselves as part of nature and limit our impact on the earth. Have you ever wondered how hard it is to work in the restaurant industry? This next story will shed light on the difficulties of working within the restaurant industry in Quebec. The Quebec Restaurant Association is advocating for the Quebec government to include a tip-sharing mechanism in the labor code. The purpose of this regulation would be to share the wealth, so to speak, by distributing and sharing customer tips among all working employees. This comes with statistics released by the association from a survey conducted last year, which demonstrates that waitstaff make approximately $27 per hour, while the kitchen staff make about $16 an hour. This would-be wage discrepancy has resulted in the loss of kitchen staff across Quebec restaurants. This labor shortage has prompted the Quebec Restaurant Association to advocate for equitable financial compensation. The general consensus among people is that kitchen staff make more money than waiters and waitresses. But it's often the case that public workers, such as politicians and servers, receive more as they are in the spotlight, while the others behind the public's eyes don't receive the recognition for the work they do. Therefore, there is a need for transparency in terms of where your tip money is actually going and how it is being distributed. Hence, within the update of the labor code, the Quebec Restaurant Association is requesting to have a sign that demonstrates to customers how their tips are distributed to the workers. And why should customers' tips be dispensed undemocratically and unfairly? All restaurant employees have contributed an equal amount of work. So there really isn't any reason the tips should be shared among all employees working within a given shift. And I'll provide a personal example. I worked at a Tim Hortons last summer, and all the tips that were received by customers for the shift was distributed equally among all team members, which I greatly appreciated because we did work as a team and we all earned our fair share, so to speak. The Quebec Restaurant Association hopes to draw some sort of inspiration from Ontario, where they have a regulation that clarifies tips belong to waiters and waitresses, but also allows an employer to collect gratuities solely for redistribution. Given that the issue is the shortage of kitchen staff, it is imperative to fabricate work policies that are equitable for all employees to bring the kitchen staff to the same level of the waiters. Political representatives were supposed to meet sometime this week to appear before a legislative committee to study the bill that is purposed to amend the province's Labor Standards Act. So it is currently at the stage of revision and proposition, so it actually hasn't gone anywhere yet. But once it does, I plan to follow it and provide an update on the bill's status once we can figure where this bill is heading. Seeing as Quebec is the province of social welfare and social services, I do see this bill moving forward. Prospects for the passing of this bill are great, so kitchen staff's well-being will improve financially. With the upcoming Quebec provincial election, brings with it the announcement of various candidacies. The CAQ is taking no time to announce seven of its candidates will be running on the island of Montreal. Party leader François Legault announced candidates will be running in seven districts, including the districts of Laurier-Dorion, Rosemont, Vaux, and Westmount-Saint-Louis. What this tells us is that representation in these ridings grant the CAQ opportunities, given the party currently has no members of parliament representative of the region in the Assemblée Nationale. Montreal covers a major populated area, and it is an opportunity to acquire representation within its ridings. As Montreal has a prominent Liberal base, the CAQ wants to show the Liberals that they are a run for their money, and perhaps after the election, the once Liberal-based island will now be a CAQ-based island. The CAQ is leading in the polls, so they are trying to acquire as much representation as reflective in their support in the polls. What's interesting about the CAQ is that it was a party that was formed in 2011, so relatively recent, and it has been increasingly perceived as an alternative to the traditional PQ and the Quebec Liberals, with favorable policies such as promoting familial values and education, which is what Quebecers really admire. I think part of what attributes to its takeoff of success is the fact that they have something new to offer to Quebecers other than, as I've said, the PQ and the Liberals. The PQ is a party that specifically advocates for the interests of Quebecois, but I think Quebecers and Quebecois are getting tired of the same old lecture of Quebec sovereignty, and they want a new sales pitch. They want a party to offer more than just sovereignty, but to tackle policies such as economic growth and providing greater social services. The CAQ is campaigning on the slogan, "Do you want a strong Quebec inside a strong Canada?" This message is more about making Quebec prominent among the Canadian provinces rather than separating itself completely from Canada. All of this to say that the CAQ is gathering a lot of attention, specifically in the media, which will serve it best coming into the election in October. I do feel it is safe to say and safe to place my money on the CAQ, as since its creation 7 years ago, is really proving to other Quebec provincial parties that it is a force to be reckoned with. I bring with delivering this news report a bit of a history lesson so that listeners can understand the irony in this news. The Bloc Québécois was created in June of 1991, pioneered by Lucien Bouchard. Bouchard was a federal cabinet minister during the Mulroney government, so much of the members of the Conservatives, and even Liberals, had transferred to the sovereign-based party, as it was the defining issue of the 1990s. Now, it appears the reverse is happening. The Bloc's slowly sinking ship has left many to jump ship in leading former Bloc members to joining the federal Conservatives. Even the former leader of the Bloc Québécois, Michel Gauthier, has announced his return to the federal Conservative Party. I suspect with incoming Bloc members, including the former Bloc leader, this will generate a domino effect, meaning other Quebec politicians will likely follow Gauthier and join the Conservatives as well. Although it has been officially confirmed, the new Quebec-based party will be called Québec Debout, where the seven leaving members of the Bloc Québécois will reconvene in federal politics. Call me a pessimist, but I don't see prospects for this party in federal politics as going very far. Look what happened to the Bloc. The same thing can occur because mobilizing within a regional-based party to compete in federal politics has proven to be a difficult task. And running away from the problem to start a new party doesn't resolve anything, but rather is an example of avoiding challenges. Consider other federal parties that had leaders with less je ne sais quoi or charisma. Members did not leave to start a new party. They stayed and held hope that the next leader will bring the party to the top once again. Besides, federal parties have something to offer to Quebecers, such as recognition of Quebec as a distinct nation, not solely Quebec-based parties like the Bloc Québécois and now the Québec Debout. The Bloc Québécois was a once segment of its time, so I'll give the Québec Debout a few years, but don't expect a happily ever after. Quebecers, or Québécois, are tired of hearing the same old sales pitch of sovereignty and focus on other federal initiatives of importance, such as the economy. And recall, I explained this in my other segment about the CAQ with something different to offer to Quebecers. The PQ is the Bloc's equivalent, except at the provincial level. So with the inflow of Conservative Party members, share is sitting pretty, particularly in Quebec. This does provide prospects for the 2019 election in that the Conservatives will have greater representation, greater campaigning by Quebecers, and so this will serve them as the benefit of acquiring Quebec-based votes. And as you know, Quebec is one of the big provinces to tackle. Most federal leaders have difficulty appealing to Quebec. Consider Jagmeet Singh, who is going to have the challenge of trying to speak French and appeal to voters despite the fact that he publicly displays his religion. This is also relevant in considering much of the Liberal support base resides in Quebec. In the election of 2015, the Liberal Party of Canada accumulated 40 seats out of 77 seats in Quebec. So competition in Quebec is really heating up. Currently, though, federal polls have pitted the Liberals back in the lead at 37%, a margin away from the Conservatives in second at 35.6%, and then, of course, the NDP is at 16.9%, Green Party at 6%, and the Bloc at 3%. Based on what I've been seeing with the Bloc members coming onto the Conservative Party, it is a bit of irony considering, as I said in the beginning, the Bloc Québécois was formed out of the disappointment for federal parties to appeal to Quebec interests. But now Bloc members are coming back to the Conservatives. But this also tells me that Scheer has a good chance of acquiring a lot of Quebec's support in the next election, which could mean that Scheer could ultimately win the 2019 federal election. Don't quote me on this, because there's so many factors that could happen between now and October of next year, but from what it looks like it's going to be another close election between the Liberals and the Conservatives. So with French Quebecois on the Conservatives, this really makes a strong campaign for the Conservatives. So this is putting the Conservatives ahead in the campaign game. I'm quite interested to see what the Liberals cook up in response to this, to see how they will be forming their campaign. I could probably go on talking about federal politics and federal elections, but I'll save more discussion of federal politics for another time. My last commentation will be about how former Prime Minister Stephen Harper is now out of the shadows and into the heat of a debate. President Donald Trump's recent decision to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal has been the talk of recent media. This includes the former Canadian Prime Minister. Harper joins the list of those supporting Trump's decision with the notion that Iran should not be given approval for its nuclear production given the uncertainty of the nation. It is not surprising given conservatives typically support the decisions of other conservatives. And Harper has been getting a lot of attention for his opinion, almost like he is attempting to make sure his voice is not forgotten and perhaps even louder than Justin Trudeau's. So what's the point? Ultimately, it doesn't really matter what Harper says, as Trudeau and Freeland shrug it off in stating Harper is entitled to his opinion. But really, that is just about it. It is the Liberal government that has control over diplomatic relations. On the other hand, Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan stated that a nation needs to stand together with one voice. Sajjan elaborates the relevance of standing together as a united country with the finalizing of NAFTA negotiations just around the corner. So we have a bit of a debate going here. So I'm going to discuss the nuclear deal to give some contextualization. So the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, also known as the Iran nuclear deal, is an agreement among the United Kingdom, China, France, Russia, Germany, the EU, Iran itself, and normally the US had it not been discontinued by Trump. Ultimately, the agreement would ensure that Iran's nuclear program was exclusively peaceful according to the US Department of State. Would these partner countries provide in turn for the peaceful operation of Iran's nuclear operation, billions in sanctioned relief to the country itself. So as long as Iran does not use the nuclear production for war purposes, these countries will provide billions of dollars in compensation. In essence, these member countries are providing economic incentives to deter Iran from misusing its nuclear energy. During Harper's reign, Harper had essentially pulled Canada from the country of Iran, which eliminated its diplomatic relations with the country and closed the embassy back in 2012. This is paired with Harper's sentiments of fighting against the country rather than negotiating with it. Consider back in the early years of Harper's reign, as leader of the opposition in 2003, Harper had supported the invasion of Iraq, and in 2006, he was evidently an advocate for Canada's combat mission in Afghanistan. While not the same countries, this does illustrate his fight over negotiation stance with Middle Eastern countries that lack political stability and often the trust of other nations. In other words, Harper's actions did capture his sentiments of these countries as pioneers of terrorism rather than hopeful allies. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, on the other hand, is looking to re-establish diplomatic relations with Iran. Within international relations, it comes down between diplomacy versus deterrence. Should countries establish harmonious relations with one another to achieve beneficial goals, or should they deter other countries from attacking? Critics have argued that the Iran deal is flawed and does not actually prevent Iran from engaging in aggressive and warfare actions. However, I do see no harm in attempting to cooperate with other nations rather than engaging in warfare. Because if Iran ultimately violates this agreement, then all the other member countries, which are powerful and are developed countries, can use any means necessary to intervene. considering Iran is in a deal with many of these powerful countries, as I've said, there is kind of a disincentive to violate the nuclear deal over threats of retaliation. So there's some deterrence there and disincentive. As I previously stated, there is a lot of criticism and uncertainty with Iran because it lacks the political stability and structure that developed Western countries typically have. Within this debate, I almost feel as though Harper is attempting to be the voice of the opposition against Trudeau's support for the nuclear deal. And this is attributed in part to Harper's experience. He was prime minister for approximately 10 years, and this was an issue that he was passionately against. So of course he would be opinionated. Again, I bring up the question, does this really matter? Yes and no, as I've illustrated before. But who ultimately makes the final decision? And that's the current government in power, and that's the Liberal government under Trudeau's leadership. You have tuned into another segment of Politics in Action. I am Emily at CJMQ 88.9 FM. Thank you, and take care until next time.